I'm delighted to be here, and it is really a very bitter, sweet presentation. About 29 years ago, Dr. Pam Kulbach, who will be your last presenter today, and I were on a panel, one of our first for both of us post-PhD, to present at APHA. This will be my last jury presentation at APHA. I'm retiring in September 2015, and guess who I share the panel with again, Dr. Pam Kulbach. Now, I have disclosed some important numbers to you, you understand, but I want to make it clear that Pam was only 14 years old at the time. So, all right, today we're going to be talking about a very, very vulnerable population in our midst. Most of us are unaware of adult survivors of childhood cancer, and that includes their own care provider. So I hope it's an important take-home message for you and your communities to be on guard for this group. They desperately need our help. There are no disclosures. Cancer treatment, pediatric cancer treatment itself, predisposes children to cardiotoxicity. Both anthracyclines and any radiation exposure to the chest. And as a result, the higher the dose of anthracyclines, the higher the dose of radiation, and the younger the age of the child, and a combined modality, getting both radiation and chemotherapy, results in really, really very bad damage to the developing myocardium. If you can imagine, children 0 to 4 years of age, the largest category for diagnosis of leukemia, we were doing total body irradiation not more than about 20 or 30 years ago. So, as a result, there's a fairly wide spectrum of bad cardiac outcomes. I put the most dramatic up here, but we could go on for another slide or two. Early stage treatment-related cardiotoxicity is progressive. It never gets better. And unfortunately, it is not detectable at the early stage by a general clinical exam. The good thing is echocardiography, angiocardiography are useful tools and can pick up this subclinical deterioration in young adults. And if we can screen them and initiate appropriate cardiac therapy, then we have every chance to both preserve function for the rest of their lives or simply minimize, modify it so that it is not as detrimental as it would be if they were not screened. The sad thing is that these survivors do not participate in any kind of screening behavior. So what were potential solutions? Well, if we could do like Walgreens and CVS, we'd have an LTFU, long-term follow-up clinic, on just about every corner. That would solve the problem. Obviously not an option. Long-term follow-up clinics for childhood cancer survivors are very far and few between. And we have tried internet, the notion of e-health, m-health strategies to reach both providers and survivors, and have been unsuccessful. Less than 5% of primary care providers will go to the internet in an effort to learn about the risk that childhood cancer survivors face and what the life course treatment should be. So, having had that experience about 10 years ago, what were alternatives? Clearly, we had to come up with something that was distance-based so that you would have experts in survivorship care delivering the intervention. Obviously, needed to be cost-effective, needed to be tailored interventions because childhood cancer survivors do not participate in screening for a variety of reasons. So to come up with a garden variety, one-size-fits-all intervention was not going to work for us. We needed to target mediators of behavior change. Those of you who are old enough to know my old work, and you'd have to be very old, would know that I have always been a big proponent of targeting motivation and affect in particular if your ultimate goal is behavior change. And then finally, since survivors are sort of relegated to taking care of themselves, giving them the language that would allow them to dialogue with a provider and say, look, this is my history, these are my exposures, I need help in getting proper long-term care. So we invented ECHOES, evaluating cardiovascular health outcomes in survivors. And I asked the question, does adding two very simple nurse counseling sessions by telephone to a pretty fancy treatment summary increase the proportion of survivors who will participate in cardiac screening after exposure to this intervention 1 year later? Now, there's the old war horse that has informed my studies through most of these however many years we established that was. And what we did was to simply operationalize this model and say, can we create an intervention here and run a randomized trial off of this model? I'm not going into details of the model. You'd get up and leave, probably. So know that it's a little bit complex, but it worked for this intervention. So our standard care group, we're targeting one of those medallions in the model, and that would be cognitive appraisal. If we provide a detailed treatment summary, if we provide a little 3x4, 5x7 laminated card with the survivor's treatment exposures and our recommended follow-up for that survivor, we were targeting their knowledge. Do they know about their late effects? Do they know about the fact that they're susceptible and vulnerable, old health belief constructs, to the risk that I have just described? And that's what the card looked like. This is something they could take to their care provider, had specific dosages of radiation, et cetera, on one side. On the other side, these are the suggestions for long-term follow-up. Now, our second intervention, both are really interventions. One is a print intervention. The other is print plus counseling. Same deal. 1 to 3 weeks later, after sending them the print summary, then they were to receive about a 10 or 15-minute call from a nurse who would interact with them around their issues relative to screening. Now we're targeting three of those ellipses in the conceptual model: cognitive appraisal, what they know, what they believe, their motivation, sense of competency, development of skills so that they can feel confident in decision making, looking at healthcare climate, helping them to negotiate that, self-regulation, and then finally affect, anxiety, depression, fear, stress, all factors that certainly contribute to non-participation in screening. You could participate in the study if you had been a childhood cancer survivor study participant. If you were 25 years of age or older, we deliberately targeted this group because we wanted independent decision makers making their own decisions about their follow-up. Of course, they had to be exposed to anthracyclines or chest radiation. They had had no screening in the last 5 years, and we knew this from their childhood cancer survivor study follow-up questionnaire. So this means this is the hardest core group, because everyone certainly that had had exposure should have had something within the last 5 years, and most are followed every 1 to 2 years. So could not be participating in a long-term follow-up program. They had to be reliable respondents to previous CCSS questionnaires and obviously have a telephone if that was going to be our instrument of intervention, and living within North America. And yes, we did have Canadian participants. This is the commercial break for the talk. I'm not going through it in great detail. It's here for anybody who wants to see, but it is essentially the childhood cancer survivor study and its 20-year history. Started out with 20,000 patients, We are now down to about 14,000 patients in the cohort, and we've had a lot of publications since 2001. How did we standardize the nurse counseling session so that this could ultimately be a canned intervention? Brilliant people in IT designed an interactive computer program for us whereby the nurse could go to the computer, immediately pull up the participant's complete medical record, their baseline questionnaire for this study, as well as their responses to the most recent CCSS follow-up study. We had scripted interactions, and I'm going to show you that in the next slide, but the computer was programmed such that if the respondent gave an answer that would put them at risk in terms of what that variable was about, that would prompt an alert for the nurse. So as she, and both of our interventionists did happen to be she in this case, could immediately sit down and see, okay, these are all the areas that suggest risk for this survivor. At the end, the computer would tally the number of scripts that the nurse had accessed, and then it would provide a little printout about the duration spent on each of the content areas and content areas addressed. The nurse would take that little prompt and immediately write a letter to the survivor and say, Mr. Smith, we talked about these issues today, and I think we left it at ta-da-da-da-da-da, getting ready for the next session. There's a sample script. In this case, the question was, do you ever worry a problem with your health will be discovered if you go to a doctor for a routine checkup? If they answered very often or almost always, that was a ding, 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 ding for our nurse to come up with something about that. She would query the survivor, say, Mr. Smith, when you answered this question, you indicated you were very worried or often thought about. Can you say more about that? Properties of the nursing intervention. Now, I think this probably goes back to Florence herself. I'm presenting nothing new here. But having a personal and meaningful interaction. You've got two shots at this, roughly 30 minutes, two interactions over 15 minutes. We have no time to waste. So when you go into that first telephone contact, you need to know as much about that patient or survivor as you possibly can. So there was pre-preparation before that telephone number was ever dialed. Obviously, the whole deal with the intervention is tailoring on these three areas. And the dialogue was a true dialogue. The survivor's not sitting on the other end of the telephone as a passive recipient of information, but they are engaging with the nurse because she's asked or brought up some issues that obviously are of concern to the survivor. And then what we've talked about, being able to dialogue about how to dialogue with healthcare providers. Listening, drawing out concerns, everything you ever learned in Interaction 101 in basic nursing preparation. We're facilitating problem solving in real time, unlike the first arm of the intervention where they read their information and they come up with how to address their reasons for not screening. Classic randomized controlled trial, we used computerized block method to assign to study arms. Patients, survivors were stratified by age, sex, and then based on their treatment exposures, what we knew to be the recommended frequency for echocardiograms. Now, with the science behind randomization, and I always believe magic is involved somehow, we ended up with almost identical size groups for both arms of the study. I think there was a difference of one. The standardized care plan had one more patient, so that was wonderful. In terms of the participants, they were more often female. They were a little bit older at diagnosis, a little higher SES, had not received cranial radiation, and reported excellent, very good, or good health, and, to our surprise, have a higher prevalence of grade 3 or 4 chronic conditions. That's a calculated variable from NCI, which grades the chronic conditions in childhood cancer survivors. What happened a year later? Well, 22.3% of the print media-only group completed screening. That stood in contrast to 52% of those who were in our nurse counseling group. So in other words, the nurse counseling group was more than twice as likely to complete screening than was the other group. Now, this is of enormous interest to me, and I think for this group in particular would be of interest to kick around, but we don't have time. So, two things that stood out, reasons for not screening. Concerns about insurance coverage. Remember, this was before affordable care. Remember, these people have pre-existing conditions. What would have happened in terms of results of this study? Look at that intervention group. 29.4% did not complete screening because of concerns about insurance. Look at the proportion of those, although not significant, those in the intervention group who could not afford or did not have insurance. Our numbers would have looked very different, we suspect. And then physician not recommending. Again, 19, almost 20% in that control group, the physician would not go ahead and follow through with the given recommendations because they didn't think it was necessary. And why didn't they think it was necessary? Because they did not find any positive findings on clinical exam. Ah! So I think our numbers would have looked differently, still all going in the right direction. But there are other things here that I think are most interesting for us to kick around, but did not think important. It's quite a difference between the control group and the intervention group. So at least we got our message across to those folks. Conclusions and future plans. I'm so happy to end my career saying yes, tailored, personalized interaction and intervention works. And it's time for me to retire because as we increasingly entertain e-health and m-health strategies, and I've got all these folks saying to me, it's because you talk to me. That's how I want to go out. That's how I want to go out. Future plans, we certainly would like to think of ways that are more disseminable. I mean, we could have a survivor care model where all of the long-term follow-up clinics in the country would initiate these outreach approaches. Empowerment to get mammograms for those, particularly Hodgkin's survivors who've had so much chest radiation, et cetera, et cetera. We've got the cost analysis on the paper going. It looks very promising. Take out the research cost. This is not an expensive intervention, and that includes the development of the interactive computer tool. That's not highbrow science, according to most IT people. And then application to other screening behaviors that are important. And that is the ECHOES research team. And without the nurse interventionist, Susan Ogg and Brenda Steen, there would be no study. Those poor women spent 4 weeks interacting with me and role-playing about how to not be coercive and leading in discussion with patients. They hated it. They went kicking and screaming because that's not how nurses really want to be. Nurses want to tell you what's good for you, and then they'd like for you to go and do it. But they did very well, and kudos to them, and thank you.